Case for argument, Hogwidge versus Dynamic Security, Mr. Shippers.
May it please the court, David Shippers for the appellant. This is a single issue case. It involves a retaliatory claim, a claim of retaliation by an individual who allied himself during an investigation with a woman who had made certain allegations of racial animus. The court below had no difficulty whatever in finding that the plaintiff had made as the court put it, a solid case of retaliation. However, as is usually the case, the employer came forth with two allegedly non-discriminatory reasons for the action of terminating the individual who is now before the court. One was that his work was not good enough, and two, there was a downsizing here in Chicago that required that he be fired. This is one of those rare cases where we don't have to rely upon circumstantial evidence in order to show pretext. We have direct evidence of pretext, direct evidence of animus, and direct evidence of retaliatory intent. The man who was the immediate supervisor of the plaintiff, before the persons came up from Alabama to conduct an investigation, that individual told the plaintiff, if you ally yourself with that woman, in other words, if you tell the truth about what happened in this hostile work environment, I will fire you. When Mr. Bell came up from Alabama for the investigation, Mr. Pogwitz, the plaintiff, told the truth, and he did, in fact, ally himself with the victim of the racial harassment. During the course of his own testimony...
Mr. Shippers, have you responded to the jurisdictional argument of your opponents?
The jurisdiction is clear. There was a petition filed in the Illinois Department of Human Rights, and we received a right to sue letter.
You're not thinking about appellate jurisdiction. An argument is made in the appellee's brief that there is no appellate jurisdiction because the case was settled. And indeed, the judgment says this judgment is based on a settlement.
The case,
one would have expected a response from you, but I haven't seen it. So
the case was not. There's nothing in the record to indicate that the case was settled as to Mr. Pogwitz. Mr. Pogwitz was out of the case.
Not only is your reply brief silent on this question, right? When you have an answer to a jurisdictional argument, the court is entitled to expect that the answer be made. But more to the point, if there's a problem with the district court's judgment, did you file a motion under Rule 59 asking the district court to correct the judgment?
There was no reason to correct the judgment, Your Honor.
The reason to correct the judgment you are now hearing.
Well, at the time...
The district court entered a judgment which said, this case has been settled. Now, your view is that the district court is incorrect. And maybe that's so. And maybe a Rule 60A motion would have been in order to produce a correct judgment. But here we are on appeal. The judgment says this case was settled.
The judgment said that the case was settled as the case stood at that point, if the court please. Mr. Pogwitz had been out of that case for 2 years.
He had not been out of the case.
There had been a motion, a summary judgment had been granted against him.
Cases are often settled after summary judgment is granted. Indeed, cases are often settled while they're pending on appeal after the district court has rendered a final decision. One can't say, because summary judgment has been granted, therefore the case couldn't have been settled. The world doesn't work that way. Now, I understand that it may be the case that only the other plaintiff settled. But then the thing to do was seek relief under Rule 60A, where at a minimum, when the issue is raised on appeal, to address it yourself.
Judge, the record itself discloses that the case was not settled as to Mr. Pogwitz. The only people who were present, the only people who signed the agreement to dismiss the case were Ms. Ross, Ms. Ross's attorney, and the plaintiff defendant.
We don't have the signed agreement to dismiss the case.
I think it's in the appendix,
the
Your Honor.
Is the judgment of the district court, which says this case is dismissed on a settlement.
Your Honor, on page
F33, I mean, it lists the two plaintiffs, says agreed order of dismissal, by agreement of the parties, and it doesn't say anything about that Pogwiz. How do you pronounce your client?
Pogwiz.
Pogwiz? Doesn't say anything. I mean, this scroll at the lower left, I think you're saying that's just Ross's lawyer.
That's me.
Know what you mean?
That's me.
Yeah, but it, you know, it's all, it's very clear.
Your Honor, there was never any intent on any party to settle the entire case. As a matter of fact, there was discussion about that at the time. And
was that discussion, Mr. Shippers, on the record?
No, Your Honor. I don't know if it was or was not. I think it was on the record with Magistrate Denlow. I think the suggestion was made by counsel for the defendants that she thought we were talking about everybody, and I said, I have no authority to settle for Mr. Pogwiz. I can't even talk about it. And there was never any question that Pogwiz was before the court or before the magistrate. And the parties to which we were referring was clearly the parties that were before the court at the time, which was the defendant and the plaintiff, Ross.
Counsel, your problem is that what's clear to you is not clear to strangers, and we're strangers to this case, nor is it clear on the face of the district court's judgment. That's one reason why one might have sought relief under Rule 60A, to conform the judgment to what actually happened.
I respectfully submit, Your Honor, that it was disingenuous for the defendant to raise the issue of a settlement with full knowledge that there was none.
We would have raised it on our own. We can read. The judgment is clear that this case was settled. Your argument is that the judgment was mistaken. But the best way to clear up mistakes is not to ask us to be mind readers, but to ask the district court to rectify the error.
If that's the court's position, I say that it's very simple for the court to clarify the whole matter by asking counsel for the defendant what the intent was. I was shocked when I read that in the brief.
Well,
I didn't think it needed an answer.
If you said these things in your reply brief, we might have avoided this discussion.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If you'd responded in your reply brief to your opponent's jurisdictional argument,
frankly, I didn't think the argument had the slightest merit. Even to merit a discussion, Your Honor, because it was everybody knew what we were doing.
Everybody is a set that excludes us.
That's true.
Don't let us in on the secret, you're likely to lose your case.
Well, if the court please, I'm letting you in on the secret now.
Okay.
I'm letting you in on the secret at oral argument that there was never any intention to settle the entire case at the time we talked to Judge Denlow, or at the time we talked to the court of Judge Manning, or at any time during the course of that settlement negotiations. Mr. Pogwiz didn't even know it was going on. So I'm if it isn't in the briefs, I'm making the statement now for the courts. As I said before, we do have direct evidence, we have circumstantial.
If you want to take my advice, your next step will be to file a motion under Rule 60A in the district court.
I will take the court's advice.
Good.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Reeves?
May it please the court. Good morning, Mr. Shippers. At page, with respect to the response on the jurisdictional issue, I direct the court's attention to appendix page 33, in which Mr. Pogwiz's name is handwritten there. And while I do believe that it may not be appropriate,
speak a little louder.
While I do believe that it may not be appropriate to talk about things that are not in the record, it was our understanding that Mr. Pogwiz was not going to appeal, and it was a surprise. And
so you're saying there was a settlement with Mr. Pogwiz in the district court?
No, ma'am. I'm saying that we had a mediation ordered after summary judgment, and all parties, including Mr. Pogwiz, were ordered to the mediation, and we had a settlement, and we, in that settlement, we discussed at the very last, well, we need a release from Mr. Pogwiz, and Mr. Pogwiz was not there. and all of this is not at the, on the record, but it was our understanding that there was not going to be an appeal and from Mr. Pogwitz's counsel, Mr. Shippers, and that the case was over. And so there was, but there was no Rule 59 motion, and there was no Rule 60 motion, and we, but we met the brief with argument on the substance.
So was there a settlement for Pogwitz? Did he settle the case?
There was, Mr. Pogwitz did not sign a settlement agreement. No. No, ma'am.
But you say he participated in a mediation?
No, sir. Mr. Pogwitz was ordered to the mediation.
But he didn't.
But he didn't come. This was the second mediation we'd attempted, and neither plaintiff came to the first mediation.
Did you file a motion for sanctions on the basis of his recalcitrance?
No, sir, we did not.
And, of course, my question for Mr. Shippers is equally applicable to you. If, in your view, the judgment of the district court was erroneous in suggesting that Pogwitz had settled, why didn't you file a motion so that the district court would enter a judgment that fully and correctly reflects what actually happened?
Because I thought what actually had happened, relying on Mr. Shippers, was that there was to be no appeal. And that was,
that's a different question from whether the judgment reflects what happened.
Oh, I believe that the judgment was correct. That when the Judge Denlow entered an agreed order of dismissal, and in fact there was going to be a dismissal. This was the end of the case.
I don't understand how it could be the end of the case
without dangling.
Yeah, with him dangling. I mean, he didn't sign the order. I mean, the settlement agreement was not signed by him.
That's
right?
Correct. That is correct. That is just the state of the record.
So you just thought he was just going to go away, fade out?
We thought his case was over and there would be no appeal, and that's just the truth. May I respond?
Sure.
Thank you. The trial judge concluded that there had been no retaliation as to Mr. Pogwitz, but she held that there had been a prima facie case, and because he had engaged in protected activity. And right here, I'd like to suggest to this court that Mr. Pogwitz's participation was in protected activity was not oppositional behavior, but it was the president of the company who had heard a report or a casual conversation between Mr. Pogwitz and a payroll clerk in Alabama that had floated back to him that said that there had been some inappropriate statement that had been made to Mr. Pogwitz by the office manager that had possibly been overheard by Beverly Ross, and he ordered the investigation. It was Mr. Pogwitz's participation in the company-ordered investigation that resulted in Mr. Pogwitz's claim that he has participated in protected activity. And I think it is appropriate, although I know of no case from this circuit, that the same actor rule which this circuit applies in hiring and firing cases, that is to say the presumption that the same person who hires is not discriminatory when that person fires, can be extended to the argument that and to the proposition in retaliation cases that a person, the president of the company, the employer company who orders the investigation, is not going to retaliate for that employee's compliance with his direction. The district judge correctly found that Pogwitz failed to show any pretext. He failed to meet a single factor that was relevant to him. He had been determined and recommended that he be discharged prior to any protected activity, if the court concludes it was protected activity. He does not show that the evidence, any evidence that the reasons were false, phony, suspicious, fishy. Mr. Pogwitz admits that there was downsizing. He admits of the three major clients for this employer that he had been barred
How long after he was fired did Dynamic reduce staff in the Oak Brook office?
Well, it had been done immediately when Mr. Wojcik, who was made the office manager immediately prior to Mr. Pogwitz filing, that Mr. Wojcik had been a salesperson. They did not hire a salesperson to fill that position. When Ms. Ross left, they did not hire a person at her level, but hired a mere clerical worker. She had been like the personnel manager. When Mr. Pogwitz was terminated, they did not replace him. Mr. Pogwitz argues, I must say variously, that he was replaced by a Polish person who was jealous because of some Polish rivalry.
What about everybody else that worked there? What about everybody else that worked
there? This was such a small office. There were only three people at the time this occurred who were employed at the office, Wojcik, Pogwitz, and Ross. Pogwitz and Ross were plaintiffs, and that was the office staff. They had been, in the prior times, as many as four people. One of the most important points that I would like to make, if the court is not satisfied on the jurisdictional issue, is that Wojcik was not a decision maker. Wojcik was carrying out the instructions of the president of the company based on an earlier determination that Pogwitz was not performing his job. He wasn't going out to the work site. He was not checking on the security guards and doing what he ought to do.
I thought your argument was that he went out to the work sites all too often.
Well,
with riding crop and general's uniform.
Well, yes, sir. Mr. Bell, who did the investigation, had allowed that Mr. Pogwitz could be a brigadier general in a company that has a paramilitary structure. But in any case,
at least he didn't go with a field marshal's baton.
Well, he did require the guards refer to him as General Pogwitz. But what I was going to say is Mr. Wojcik was not a decision maker. It was Mr. Riddle, who was the president of the company, who decided on the office staff. The office staff could hire the security guards, but they could not. And this was not just a rule that came into being with when Mr. Wojcik took over the office manager's job on October the 7th, 1996. Mr. Bell of Chicago, not of Alabama. Mr. Bell had previously been the office manager. He didn't have the authority to hire, and the court has that evidence within the papers presented on summary judgment. The immediately preceding office manager, Barker, who had recommended the termination of Pogwitz, did not have the authority to terminate Pogwitz or, in fact, to hire staff. Wojcik, since you must make all inferences in favor of the non-movement, it was pretty clear that Wojcik and Pogwitz had a bad relationship and that Pogwitz delivered the message. But the delivery of the message, along with the statement that Wojcik himself may close the Chicago office, which in fact happened, is not evidence that he was the decision maker.
Can we get back for a moment to this jurisdictional issue? You said something about Mr. Shippers had represented and made some representation to you about not appealing, or did you say that, or did I misunderstand?
Well, after the case was over, Mr. Shippers is an honorable man, and we have had a wonderful relationship in this case. I'm not offering any criticism of Mr. Shippers. I understood Mr. Shippers to say the case was over, there would be no appeal, but we shouldn't let things fall apart. Mr. Pogwitz was not there. And the magistrate was there, and he heard this discussion, and it was not a surprise to me when the order came out that said that we were satisfactorily resolved. And that is my recollection.
Was there an award of cost in the district court?
Yes, sir. There was. It's included within the minute order made by Magistrate Dunlow, of each party to bear his own cost and attorney's fees.
Well, that was part of the settlement?
Yes, sir. Appendix page 32.
And that order was applied to the benefit of Pogwitz?
I would assume so.
Well, it's not a question of assumption. We really do need to know. That actually makes it look more like a settlement, because otherwise your client, as the prevailing party, would be entitled to collect costs from Pogwitz.
The order says that it is hereby ordered that the litigation is dismissed with prejudice, each party bear its own cost.
We can read the order.
Yes.
But there's nothing other than that order that you have to point to?
No, sir. I know of no other information.
Okay, well, thanks very much. So, Mr. Schiffer, does he have a minute? Okay.
Clarify, I did say that I would probably recommend that there be no appeal because I didn't want my client to be throwing good money after bad. After I read the record, after I went through the whole thing, I changed my mind and I recommended to my client that he appeal. Your Honor, to answer you...
On my question, was an award of costs ever made against your client?
No, never was addressed. It was never addressed, Your Honor.
If this case, in fact, ended by summary judgment and not settlement, your client should have paid costs.
Not necessarily. On a summary judgment, it's very seldom that the court awards costs to the against the prevailing party. One thing that I do want to clarify, Your Honor, listening...
Why? The rule creates an entitlement of the prevailing party to cost. You don't award costs against the prevailing party.
Cost
the losing party.
That's
your
right.
Client was the losing party.
And there's a possibility that a cost could have been awarded. It was never addressed by the court below. I very seldom
have
seen...
Well, it was addressed, wasn't it? That all parties to bear their own costs.
That was at the end. That was when that was Judge Denlow that put that into his agreement, and that's what went on to the court.
So, Dynamic could have sought costs against your client.
They could have gone back to court, gone back to Judge Manning, and asked for costs. I doubt very much if they would have got it. May I have 30 seconds to address?
If they had not got costs, we would have reversed. They have a legal entitlement to costs.
I'll accept that, Your Honor. Your
prediction that Judge Manning wouldn't follow the law seems a very strange one.
Well, no, I'm not saying that, Judge. What I'm saying is
what
I have...
What you just said.
Judge, I've been practicing in the district court for 40 years, and I've never seen a case where costs were awarded against the losing party in a summary judgment. I have never seen it, and I believe me, I've been the losing party in a summary judgment many, many times. Could I address one point that you raised, Judge?
Yeah.
The issue of the alleged settlement was never raised in argument, nor was it even raised in the statement of the case. Ms. Reese? I don't know which one to use. Ms. Reese stated the fact in her statement of the case. It was never argued. It was never brought up. However, I intend to take your advice.
It is in the jurisdictional section, together with an assertion that this court lacks appellate jurisdiction.
Right. I will take your advice, Your Honor, and thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you to both parties. And.